have fired coach Dominic Ducharme. The Lakers feeling a sense of urgency to make changes, according to ESPN's Dave McMenamin, as tomorrow's NBA trade deadline looms. Lakers believe their roster's not working. Something needs to be done to get the team back on course. LA's dropped 10 of 15, including last night's loss to the Bucks, a game in which Russell Westbrook was benched late for the second straight game. Coach Frank Vogel, not the only one who has issues with Russ, says ESPN's Kendrick Perkins.
Russ don't realize, and it's a shame, that not only has he lost the trust of Frank Vogel and the coaching staff, but he's also lost the trust of LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell today at his Super Bowl press conference said the league fell short in terms of increasing the number of minority head coaching jobs this offseason, said the NFL will bring in experts to look at the Rooney Rule and other policies to see what the league can do to increase minority hiring.
ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN Plus. I'm Amber Wilson. He's Chris Canty. We are taking you up until 7 o'clock Eastern. You can tweet to us, join the conversation at ChrisCanty99, at AmberW790. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Now, Roger Goodell, he spoke in his State of the League address, Chris. That's, of course, the address that he gives every year leading up to the Super Bowl. And it's coming off of the heels of former head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Brian Flores, filing his federal class action lawsuit last week against the league and three NFL franchises where he's alleging racial discrimination. So obviously, Goodell was asked about that. And more specifically, Chris, Roger Goodell was asked about the lack of diversity in terms of head coaches in the NFL right now. There's five minority head coaches in the entire league. There's three black head coaches in Tomlin, Love, and McDaniel. Here was Roger Goodell today addressing that issue.
Well, they are getting into the room and they're getting the interviews. In fact, they're exceeding anything in the Rooney Rule as far as the interviews. It's the what we want to try to see is the outcomes, right? We want to see black head coaches in the NFL and coaches of people of color and eventually gender that we think is all important. So it's an inclusive process and hopefully an inclusive outcome. And I think so what we're going to do is step back and look at everything we're doing today, reevaluate that, everything from looking at the Rooney Rule and seeing what changes should be made to that, if any changes, or should it be removed, which some people have suggested. All of those things are part of that. We're going to talk to other people, have independent people come in and look and help us evaluate it, because it's sometimes hard to evaluate your own policies and procedures, and make sure that we're doing everything we possibly can to create that opportunity for everybody, to make sure that we are an inclusive league and make sure we get the outcomes we want, and that our policies really truly are effective with outcomes.
It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And Chris, when Brian Flores filed this lawsuit and I first read it, I think you and I had this discussion. I wasn't sure how strong it was in terms of, you know, from a legal perspective, in terms of how strong of a case, but I thought the attorneys did a beautiful job laying out the ineffectiveness of the Rooney Rule in the NFL and the lack of diversity in terms of head coaches and in terms of the front office. And I know when I was on with you and Mike Golic Jr. and we were discussing this situation, I said that I thought that at least this would spark a conversation where the NFL once again has to publicly address, and I think hopefully go further than that, and actually seriously address the issue and how ineffective what they have currently instituted is. I mean, it's not working. It's all well and good for the commissioner to get up there and say, hey, we all want more diversity in the NFL. But it's a whole nother thing, Chris, getting that diversity. Do you feel any better after hearing Roger Goodell address that?
Hell no, I don't feel any better, Amber. And the reason why is because of the NFL's initial reaction when Brian Flores filed his class action lawsuit last week. When we saw that, a couple of hours after that was filed in federal court in Manhattan, the NFL issued a strong denial, and the teams that were implicated in the class action lawsuit issued statements as well denying the merits of Brian Flores' claims. If the NFL was serious about diversity in trying to understand the perspective of black head coaches or coaches of color, then they would have been more amenable to actually hearing out what Brian Flores had to say and actually investigating the claims that he made. But instead, they issued a strong denial and they tried to attack the credibility of the claims that Flores was making. And then we saw Roger Goodell soften in that stance after public criticism for 48 to 72 hours and say that, well, we're going to look into this because we think it's important to understand the experiences that black head coaches and coaches of color are having in our league when it comes to the hiring processes and whether or not it's a fair and equitable landscape. So, no, I'm not optimistic that anything is going to change. To me, this is more of CYA from the NFL, and it's really not on Roger Goodell in the league office. It's on the 31 owners and the Green Bay Packers. That's who I hold responsible for all of this. I believe Roger Goodell to be a decent man. I think he's done a good job as the commissioner of the NFL, and that's shown by how popular the sport has become under his supervision. But when it comes to this particular issue, I don't know how anyone can make the claim that we've made progress. And you can point to sheer numbers and the fact that we had two black head coaches hired during this cycle. We had 9 total coaching vacancies, and the 2 black coaches that were hired, you can make an argument that they got 2 of the worst jobs within the 9 that were available. So I don't know that we've come a long ways in terms of creating more diversity amongst the coaching ranks, and I don't have a silver bullet or an answer to trying to fix all of these issues. But what I do know, Amber, is that the NFL is not capable of doing it themselves. They need an outside party, a third party, to be able to step in when it comes to creating a fair and equitable process when we go through the hiring cycles so that black coaches and minority candidates actually get an opportunity, a fair opportunity, to get hired as a head coach in the National Football League.
The Rooney Rule was instituted about 20 years ago, and there was, 3 black head coaches, I believe, at the time in the NFL that it was instituted, and now here we are with 3 black head coaches in the NFL. So certainly there hasn't been progress. If anything, we've remained stagnant in that department despite the Rooney Rule. And, from what you just said, the lawyer in me is never going to be surprised when people come out and deny allegations when they're being sued. But there was a way to deny the discrimination allegation and still admit that there is an issue with diversity, and now we're getting that from Roger Goodell. I was surprised that we didn't get that on the back end of the initial statement, that it was just deny, deny, deny. Now it seems like the NFL is certainly taking a different approach. And he was specifically asked, Roger Goodell was, about the ineffectiveness of the Rooney Rule.
The Rooney Rule, as an example, has changed many times over. I think we're on at least 5 or 6 changes, which is a good thing in the sense of how it evolves, how it has to change to address the issues that we are facing today. And I think that's the core of the message that we've been talking about here is, okay, we're not having the success we want with head coaches. How do we evolve that rule? Or do we have to have a new rule? Do we need to figure out some other way of being able to achieve that outcome? And I think we're not going to rest until we find that. And we get those kind of outcomes that I think are they're mandatory for us. There just has to be the way we're going to move forward to have an inclusive league.
You know, he said it's evolved over these years, and it hasn't been effective at all the way that it has, in fact, evolved, if that's been the case. And he's kind of posing everything. And listen, I understand he's the commissioner. I understand what he's doing here. But he's posing everything as like a question. You know, do we need to make a change? Maybe we need to make a change. Maybe we need a new rule. You know, I think emphatically, yes, you need new something, because what you're doing ain't working, Chris.
No doubt about it, Amber. But here's the thing. In order to get the results that the NFL says that they're looking for, they're going to have to get the owners to move outside of their comfort zone, because that's what this comes down to, right? It's not a true meritocracy. It's not that all of these coaches are getting hired just off of the basis of their resume and what they've done in this league. We know that relationships are going to play a factor. We know that a certain comfort level with these candidates is going to play a factor. But what needs to happen is have more transparency throughout the process, because that does eliminate, to some degree, the subjectivity when it comes to these coaching hires. It can't just be about this candidate being a better fit than that one, even though another candidate might have a better resume. We've got to find a way to do that. And to me, that's where the role of a third party stepping in could actually be beneficial, to have somebody that can make a recommendation similar to what Fortune 500 companies do when they go through searches for their CFOs or CEOs or CMOs. They have search firms that go out and make recommendations to the board, and then at that point leave it at the owner's discretion. But make the findings, make the recommendations from that search firm public so everybody knows, including the fan base, the candidate that was recommended versus the candidate that was hired. I think that's the way where the NFL can somewhat level the playing field and give more coaches of color, more minority candidates, more black head coaches an opportunity. Because I can promise you this, Amber, with all of the former players that want to be in coaching, former players that want to be in scouting, there is no shortage of qualified candidates that are black to become head coaches in the National Football League. There isn't. That is a fact. This game is 73% black when it comes to players on the field. So it's not that the individuals don't have the acumen. It's not that we don't have a base. It's not like the NFL doesn't have a pipeline in order to create candidates that can rise their ways through the ranks and become head coaches. It's just a matter of when they get in those positions, actually landing the plane and giving them an opportunity that's comparable to their white counterparts. And that's what hasn't been happening in the National Football League. And so that's the shift that the NFL needs to have, because there is a difference between making a hire versus giving someone an opportunity. And I think the NFL has to do everything that they can to bridge that gap when it comes to the difference between black head coaches and the jobs they get versus white head coaches and the jobs they get.
Yeah, it's inconceivable in a league that's overwhelmingly black that the best candidate most often or always would, of course, not be black. That's absolutely inconceivable. And I think what we're learning here is that it's not always the best person for the job who gets the job, but sometimes the most comfortable person for the job. And that's not always the best person. And what the league should want as a whole, and what everybody should want, because it would elevate the entire league, it would elevate the competition, it would elevate what we're seeing on the field, is for the best coaches to be out there, for the best coaches to get those jobs, not necessarily who's a friend of a friend or who you're comfortable with, but the best person for the actual job. That was Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Coming up, it is Super Bowl week, so let's get to it. Which team has the edge at quarterback? Is it LA? Is it Cincy? We discuss. That's next here on ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. This is ESPN Radio.
You're listening to ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80 and ESPN Plus. I'm Amber Wilson. He's Chris Canty. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $700 on average. There is a thing called the Super Bowl coming up, Chris Canty. And so let's talk about this little matchup that we have ahead of us on Sunday. And I think that the most obvious place to start with this one is the quarterbacks, because they're a centerpiece of this game. Obviously, they're a centerpiece of every team, but with everything that's happened here with Joe Cool and Joe Burrow, and I think the fact that none of us necessarily expected him to get here, and then the way on the opposite end, how the Rams were constructed, where Matt Stafford was quite literally brought in fact, get here. So it feels like these teams were constructed in very, very different ways. I guess if you want the organic construction, then you're rooting for Cincy. And if you're into the flash and more like the LA way of bringing things together, it's such an LA story, you know, you're kind of buying the championship, so to speak, then you're probably rooting for the Rams. But it's interesting, because I think we could have a conversation. As much attention as Burrow is getting right now, and as much as we're all buying into Burrow and he's as flashy and he's going to become, you know, people are talking about him being the next face of the league and all that, because, man, we live and die in the moment. Poor Patrick Mahomes. Sorry, bro. That was like 2 weeks ago. You know, we've moved on from you already. But I think that we could have a conversation about who's actually the better quarterback right now, because it's maybe not as cut and dry as people think it actually is. If I was going to ask you who is going to be better in this game, Matthew Stafford or Joe Burrow, first of all, is that a crazy question? And second of all, who would you have?
No, I don't think it's a crazy question. When you look at both of these offenses, they're right there neck and neck when it comes to the skill position cores, when it comes to the quarterbacks. I think the key point of difference would be the offensive line, and the Rams clearly having the better of the two. But Amber, to that I would say that means that Joe Burrow has a heavier lift when it comes to being able to put his team in positions where they can have success. When you look at points per drive, the Los Angeles Rams throughout the course of the playoffs are third. The Cincinnati Bengals are fourth. Like, they're both right there. Now, Matt Stafford has the edge when it comes to total QBR over Joe Burrow, but in terms of the overall impact on their team winning, Joe Burrow has to do more in order for his team to have success. When you look at the supporting cast for Matt Stafford, He's got arguably one of the most innovative offensive minds working for him on the sidelines in their head coach, Sean McVay. He's got arguably the best wide receiver in the National Football League in Cooper Kupp. He's got arguably the best number two wide receiver in Odell Beckham Jr. He's got a really solid offensive line. On defense, you got the best defensive player in the NFL, not to mention having Von Miller, a former Super Bowl MVP, alongside him. In the secondary, you've got the best corner in the National Football League. So there's a lot supporting Matt Stafford and allowing him to be able to go on this magical run and get this team into the Super Bowl. Oh, by the way, they happen to be the second team in a row to host the Super Bowl. But I look at what the Cincinnati Bengals have to do and their margin for error and their path to victory. It's much more narrower than what the L.A. Rams are bringing to the party, and that's just based on personnel and the talent base that the two teams have. And so from that standpoint, I got to give the edge to Joe Burrow in this one. Even though he doesn't have the arm talent, the physical attributes that Matt Stafford does, this guy is just clutch when it comes to making the critical plays to allow his team to have success. Even when they get thrown for negative plays, when he gets sacked, like in the Tennessee Titans game when he was hit 13 times, he just finds a way to be able to overcome it. And then this defense has been very opportunistic when it comes to takeaways, and then Joe Burrow has been money when it comes to capitalizing on those. So when you look at the turnover margin, the Cincinnati Bengals are second in the playoff field in turnover margin. That's been a big part of their story. But Joe Burrow cashing in on those opportunities and protecting the football, I think, is what paved the way for them to be able to get here.
You hit it dead on when you were talking about the construction of these two teams, because I think we could argue actually that both of these guys have the best receiver in the league, right? I think there's an argument to be made.
Fair point.
Beyond that position, I mean, Matt Stafford, I think it's fair to say, has the better team around him and has more help. And it was constructed that way, as I alluded to before. And because of that, I wouldn't be surprised if Matt Stafford has the better game. If we pull his numbers, if he keeps down the turnovers, you mentioned that Bengals D. Listen, that's a tall task. That's a tall task for Matt Stafford, no matter who he's up against, and it's going to be a tall task here on this stage in the Super Bowl. But I think we could see a game where Matt Stafford at the end of the game has the better numbers. He was the better quarterback in that game. But I think being the better quarterback in this matchup and being the better quarterback overall are two different conversations. I think both you and I agree that Joe Burrow is that dude in the future. I think he's the better quarterback overall, even though Matt Stafford's sample size is much, much larger. We've obviously seen a lot more of his career than we have from Joe Burrow, so I don't want to be too prisoner of the moment, but there is that X factor with Joe Burrow. And the fact that Joe Burrow is doing it on a lesser team without an O-line in front of him, where he's having to evade the pressure, where he's having to use his legs in ways that, frankly, coming off of that injury, I'm not even sure that we knew that he was capable of doing. It's been so impressive. His pocket presence, the way he can read the rush, it's been really, really unbelievably impressive for a sophomore quarterback. But I do think in this game, because Matt Stafford has more help, you could argue that he's going to have the better game, even if Joe wins this one in the long run. Coming up next here on ESPN Radio, what makes Joe Burrow so special? But first, Chris, hit us with that Indeed.
Just because it's Cupid's month doesn't mean you have to love a difficult hiring process. If you need to hire, you need Indeed, the all-in-one hiring platform that makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates. With tools like Instant Match, you'll instantly receive a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description the moment you sponsor a post. Just invite them to apply, and you can even schedule and conduct interviews all from your employer dashboard. To learn more, visit Indeed.com/credit. Amber Wilson and Chris Canty on ESPN Radio, back after this.
One thing that I see about Joe Burrow, if you ever look through his helmet, that man, he don't flinch.
Put it in my hands, Trey. It's over.
Just a kid from Ohio coming down chasing a dream. I'm here to win games and win championships.
They're calling him Joe Burrow.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. This is ESPN Radio.
Listening to ESPN Radio, which is presented to you by Progressive Insurance. I'm Amber Wilson. He's Chris Canty. You can join us in the conversation at ChrisCanty99, at AmberW790 on Twitter. You can also call us on what we're calling the Canty call-in line.
That's right, the Canty call-in line, Amber.
1-888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. Jumpstart the new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. So Chris and I were having a conversation about the quarterbacks in this upcoming matchup on Sunday. No better person to join us for the conversation than former Bengals quarterback Carson Palmer. And Carson, I have to start in the most obvious place with you, but there's no better place to start. What are your impressions so far of Joe Burrow?
I think just his ability to stay calm. I mean, he's played against, you know, last week against the Kansas City Chiefs, who have been there a bunch and won Super Bowls and have a bunch of Pro Bowlers and all pros and found a way to win on the road. The week before, he went to the number one seed Tennessee Titans in the divisional round and got sacked nine times against a team that was really good and just really ferocious on defense. And he just stayed calm. He just stayed cool. He was collected. His offensive linemen feel it. His other teammates on defense feel his poise. And to be in year two and be on a team that he's just – every team he goes up against in the playoffs, they're just outmatched. They have, from top to bottom, typically better rosters in Kansas City and here in L.A. against the Rams. And they just find a way to win. They've been extremely poised. They've been extremely opportunistic and made plays and made interceptions on defense, got the ball back in Joe's hands, and found ways to get the ball to their playmakers on offense. They do have some great talent. They have some really good players, but they're playing against teams that are just stacked with Pro Bowlers and better rosters, and they just continuously find a way to find a little bit of magic at the end of games and put the game in their kicker's hands, and he hasn't missed yet. He's been money, McPherson. So it's just been an amazing run by a team that nobody expected to be here, and the team that nobody thought had a chance to beat Kansas City at Arrowhead. Nobody thought they had a chance to beat the number one Tennessee Titans, and they just continuously find ways to win.
Carson, looking at the quarterback on the other side of this matchup, Matt Stafford, there were a lot of expectations for him coming into this season, and a lot of people thought that this was Super Bowl or bust for the Rams, and people had questions about whether or not Stafford would be capable of elevating this team once they did get into the playoffs. Has Matt Stafford rewritten the narrative on his career in terms of being able to do a lot of high-level winning in the National Football League?
Well, not yet. I mean, I think this is the final piece of the puzzle. And you think back to that 2018 year when the Rams went to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff at quarterback, and Goff played great in the NFC Championship and went into New Orleans, and they beat the New Orleans Saints with Drew Brees and all the players they have, and he didn't play well in the Super Bowl. And Matt Stafford played great in the NFC Championship. He beat the 49ers and all the great talent that they have and played at a very high level, but they didn't make all those trades in L.A. To get Stafford here to win the NFC Championship. They brought him here to do something they didn't think they could get done with Jared Goff, and that's win on Super Bowl Sunday. So, I don't think the script has been written. I think this is a huge game. There's tremendous amount of pressure on Stafford first and foremost, but also on the organization. The organization made the trade to win this game, not win the 18 or 19 other games they played throughout the season. So he's got to play well, and they've got to win this game to prove that they made the right decision, giving up all the draft picks they did to get him out of Detroit and get Stafford to L.A.
Former Bengals quarterback Carson Palmer on with Amber Wilson and Chris Canty here on ESPN Radio. So, Carson, a lot of people were overlooking this Bengals team early in this season. I know you're particularly plugged into this team, but was there a certain point where you actually started believing in them as a Super Bowl contender?
Not really. It just, when they were going up and won that first game at home against the Raiders, I thought they were better. And I think a lot of people felt that they probably had a better roster and had a good chance to win that game. But nobody gave them a chance going to Tennessee and knocking off the number one team or the number one seed in the AFC. The Titans were getting Derrick Henry back. They had had a week to rest and prepare and rest their bodies and be energized. And the Tennessee Titans got beat. And then they went into Arrowhead, and nobody gave them a chance. Nobody thought they could go in and beat Patrick Mahomes and the team that's been to, their fourth straight AFC championship and Super Bowls and all that. And nobody thought they were going to win that game. And now here they are playing against the LA Rams, the glitz and glamour of Hollywood, and Jalen Ramsey and Von Miller and Stafford and all the powerhouse guys they have, OBJ and Cooper Kupp. Nobody's given them a chance. You know, I just there's so much talent on this LA Rams team. There is so many great, great players that are probably going to be fitted for gold jackets and go into the Hall of Fame one day. And you look at this young, young, inexperienced roster of the Bengals, there's just so much firepower. I don't know if they have enough firepower to match what the Rams have going on their sideline and in that huddle in order to win a Super Bowl.
Carson, this offseason, there could be two high-profile Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks that are available via trade, that being Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. Now, feels like you're the person to ask this question because of what happened late in your career with moving on from the Bengals and going out to the Raiders. But in those particular situations, from your perspective, what should those two quarterbacks do if they're prioritizing winning at the highest levels?
Well, you look at Aaron Rodgers' situation, and that's a great organization. I mean, the Green Bay Packers, you know, have multiple Super Bowls. They've proven with Aaron as their quarterback that they can win a Super Bowl. And I just think the grass can always, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. And there's a reason for that. And I just worry that, you know, Aaron leaves a great organization that knows what it takes to get to a Super Bowl, that's done it. They've proved it. They've got a ring with Aaron as their quarterback. And, you know, I know he's frustrated with the Jordan Love pick and just certain things that have happened. But like I said earlier, the grass isn't always greener on the other side. And it just feels like you're in a small town in Green Bay and you keep not being able to get over that hump for the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And you got to change things up. But that's a really good organization. It's a well-coached team. They've won 13 games, I think, 3 or 4 seasons in a row. So I would just be nervous to see him go, because it's not his pick. He doesn't get to pick where he gets traded to. And I know there's been some rumors about him going to Denver, which is a great organization. They know how to win Super Bowls. They've been there before. They've done it. But maybe he doesn't end up getting traded to the Broncos. Maybe somebody else makes a play for him, and then he's in a worse situation than he was in Green Bay with only 3, maybe 4 years left in his career. So I would just be really tentative to demand a trade without knowing where you're going to end up. And I think Russell Wilson's situation, I'd hate to see him wear a different uniform. I love Russell Wilson in the Seahawks uniform. He's had magic. He's won Super Bowls. He's played great. They've had some down years. But again, I mean, unless you're Russell Wilson and you can get somewhere like Pittsburgh, which Pittsburgh would be a great place because it's a phenomenal organization. They draft well. They do well in free agency. They're the Steelers are the holy grail of the NFL. So if Russell can get there, that would make some sense. But I don't see another place outside of Pittsburgh that makes more sense than him staying in Seattle.
Carson, your former coach, Marvin Lewis, he detailed on First Take how he experienced a similar interview with the Panthers back in 2001, a similar experience as Brian Flores has detailed in his class action lawsuit that concerns the Broncos and the Giants. What is your reaction to Marvin Lewis's comments and the diversity issue at the head coaching position in the NFL?
Oh, I agree. It's a massive issue. There's just too many great African-American coaches that either haven't gotten interviews or haven't had a chance to get to be a head coach, or have been interviewed just to fill a quota, just to fill the Rooney rule with somebody else waiting in the wings. So the Rooney rule is not doing what it was supposed to do. Something needs to change. I don't have a direct answer on exactly what needs to change to make it work the way it's supposed to and the way it was intended to work. But unfortunately, we're in a situation where it's not working the way it was intended to work.
3-time Pro Bowl quarterback Carson Palmer. Carson, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Coming up next, we transition to the NBA. What is the level of urgency for the Nets to make a trade? Let's talk some hoops next here on ESPN Radio.
Nicknamed the Wizard, Ozzie Newsome was a Hall of Fame tight end, and in 2002 was named the first black general manager in the NFL. Under Newsom's watch, the Ravens won 2 Super Bowls while drafting 3 Hall of Famers and 25 Pro Bowlers.
ESPN Radio celebrates Black History Always.
We're a little less now than 24 hours from the NBA trade deadline. And you and I talked a lot about the Lakers earlier in the show. Well, there's another very high profile team with superstars on it where things are not trending the right direction. And I'm talking about the Brooklyn Nets. And they have an opportunity here to make a trade. If James Harden had anything to say about it, he would be the guy they'd be trading away. And Harden's starting to do what we saw him do in Houston. And is this just like a Harden thing now, Chris Canty, where when things aren't going according to plan, we're going to see James Harden act out or take some time off? I know he had the hammy, but I think at this point it feels a whole lot like James Harden is kind of protesting his presence there in Brooklyn, and he hasn't come out in the fat suit yet. I am waiting for that to happen. Again, he's got like, James, you got like 22 hours to make that happen, bro, to put on the fat suit. But either way, he has been disgruntled or apparently so these last couple weeks with Brooklyn, and the reports are out there that he wants a trade. I know the 76ers are going to enter that conversation. We'll get to that in a second, Chris, but let's kind of focus here on the Nets thus far. With the Nets, we talked a lot about Kyrie, and hey, he's only going to be available for home games, but they're losing the road games too, Chris. I don't know what's happening in Brooklyn, but it ain't pretty.
Yeah, I mean, well, they lost at home last night in the Barclays, and of course that means Kyrie Irving didn't play, but you also didn't have James Harden because of the quote-unquote hamstring. But there is clearly frustration, and it's not just between the big three, but I think it's boiling over to the rest of the team. Now, I get it. You didn't have any of those guys on the court last night, but you got boat raced by the Boston Celtics. Now, Boston is playing better. I think they've won 5 or 6 in a row. But all you need to know about last night's game, Amber, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time breaking it down because, quite frankly, you don't have to. At 5 minutes left in the first quarter, the score was 28-2. Let me repeat that. With 5 minutes left to go in the first quarter, the score was 28-2. Boston led wire to wire. The lead was as big as 35 points. I mean, when you look at the stat sheet at the end of the game and the plus minuses, I don't know how the hell Patty Mills was minus 47 in 21 minutes played, but that's exactly what it said. I had to look a couple of times just because I thought it was a misprint. I looked at a couple of different publications, but that was what it was. It just goes to show you how far this team has fallen in terms of them being able to realize expectations. And I get it. From a talent standpoint, you're not going to be able to keep up with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. But there's also a chemistry aspect to this thing, and that's the part that I'm starting to get concerned with, because there's obviously friction between Kyrie Irving and James Harden, and James Harden with the Nets organization. And so I think the first warning that we should have recognized, the first red flag that we should have saw coming into this year, was James Harden not signing the contract extension that the Nets put on the table when they were in training camp. But then starting to see some of the frustrations boil over with the post-game press conferences, some of the things that James Harden was saying about Kyrie Irving needing to find a way to be available, not just on the road games, but in the home games. I think that's what James Harden is looking at. And over the course of the last year or so, I think James Harden has seen enough from Kyrie Irving to realize that this is not somebody that he can depend on in order to be a key piece to them trying to win a championship. And for James, he's the one of the big three in Brooklyn that doesn't have a ring. So you've got to think that there's more urgency for him to get this done. And with every loss that continues to mount with this team, it's becoming more obvious that Brooklyn is not the place for him to be able to get that done.
I'm not going to sound the alarms coming off of a Boston game where, like you said, the big three weren't available, but I am going to sound the alarms when we're now coupling the Kyrie Irving drama with a James Harden drama that has been brewing, as you mentioned, where James Harden is very clearly choosing not to be available and choosing when he is available not to contribute like we know James Harden can contribute. You mentioned that he turned down that 3-year, $161 million extension in the offseason. When you turn down that kind of bag, Chris, maybe you're right. That should have been our first sign. So the Nets here have an opportunity to make a deal. There's a lot of rumors I mentioned about the 76ers because they have a player in Ben Simmons who's doing nothing for them, who obviously very much wants to get traded. Now the Nets have a player in James Harden who very much wants to get traded. Could there be a bit of a swaparoo that happens here before the trade deadline? Here's ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj was on Greeny earlier. He addressed whether the Nets are going to trade Harden by the deadline.
I think Brooklyn still believes right now its best path is to get Kevin Durant back and get James Harden healthy and Kyrie Irving on the court. And and get those three together again after the All-Star break when they're hopeful Durant could be back. It is not a perfect or ideal scenario right now with James Harden. There's no question about that. But I think barring, you know, a flurry of negotiations and activity that hasn't happened yet, right now, I think James Harden is likely to be with the Nets. Again, it's always fluid, but I don't sense an appetite from Brooklyn to do a deal that's just simply Ben Simmons for James Harden.
I don't expect either of those guys, frankly, to be moved before the trade deadline tomorrow, but it does present an interesting scenario. We had George Sedano on with us earlier in the show. He thought Ben Simmons would be an upgrade in terms of fit for that Brooklyn team. I have a hard time believing that because James Harden is just the better player. So if I'm the Nets, I ain't giving him up yet. I think that there's an opportunity here. Maybe he opts in and then there's a trade to be had in the offseason. But right now, before this deadline, I don't see this happening.
Well, James Harden doesn't want to be there right now. So I have a hard time believing that, well, a healthy Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and that vaccine mandate being lifted is going to erase all of the hurt feelings that James Harden has experienced up until this point in his tenure with the Brooklyn Nets. And so that's the piece that I think Brooklyn is being a little bit unrealistic about, thinking that Kevin Durant coming back healthy is going to fix all the ills that are facing them from a chemistry standpoint. I just don't see that happening, which is why I think they need to think long and hard about making a deal at the deadline.
Well, they've got something like 22 hours to get that done, so we'll see what happens. But coming up next, Roger Goodell says the NFL fell short in hiring of minority head coaches. That's next. This is ESPN Radio.